My guest today is Sophia Demling. Sophia grew up in New York City with aspirations to be a world-famous artist or Broadway actress. Now she is a writer and editor in Dallas, Texas. She started her career with the Dallas Morning News. Today, she writes books and publishes articles and essays. With her Psychology Today blog, Introverts Corner, and her books, The Introvert's Way and Introverts in Love, she was among the pioneers in the introvert positive movement. These days, Sophia is exploring grief in her Psychology Today blog called Widow's Walk. Welcome, Sophia. I'm so happy to have you as one of my inaugural guests on the Introvert Ally.
I'm honored. Happy to be here.
I'm honored. I all is well. And, you know, I think I need to tell our listeners, I couldn't remember how exactly we first met, but I think we were definitely one of the, my daughters call it pioneers. But we were in the early brigade, if you will, to use another war metaphor, of the introvert champions. So maybe I think we started to talk to each other more when you were writing Psychology Today, the blog.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I always appreciated about you is that you respected me as an extrovert in this space.
Yes, that's actually been one of my soapboxes is the, there's a tendency among introverts to sort of take a superior stand. We're deeper thinkers and we're more creative and, you know, our friendships are deeper. And I just think that's wrong. I think that we're, you know, peanut butter and jelly. We're yin and yang. It's two different ways of being. And if I want introversion to be respected, it's on me to respect extroversion and to try to understand that as well.
Well, I always appreciate that as an extrovert. I wonder, you used to talk to me about some of the comments that you got that could be really construed as negative on your Facebook page. Do you recall that of the kind of anger that kind of came out from people saying, well, you know, anti-extrovert? And you highlighted that.
Yes, it's really common, and I just think it's wrong, and it's something that I've written about more than once, and I had a board of extroverts for a while where I would run things by them and get the extroverted point of view on things, because I think it's, if we're trying to understand each other, that's as important as talking about what introversion is.
Well, I commend you for that. And you've always taken that stance. Tell me what, growing up, talk a little bit about your experience as perhaps an introvert, not wearing your journalist hat, but being Sophia. I know you grew up in the New York area, an extroverted place, right? I would say in terms of a culture, or would you agree?
I suppose, although, you know, you learn in New York City because of the amount of, you know, the crowds all the time, you learn to create a bubble of privacy even within a crowd. And so I think it's actually teaches introvert skills in a way, because you can't smile at everybody you pass on the street.
But, you know, being a New Yorker myself, we're still friendly, right, though?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Once you break through that protective bubble that a New Yorker has to keep around, then they're very friendly, but they're not necessarily going to open that up themselves. It's how you keep sane in that.
How you keep sane in that bubble. So as a child, where would you go? How would you escape? And you mentioned the bubble, but, you know, in that noisy, busy place, would you go to, did you have certain places you would go to have that quiet solitude?
Well, like so many, my bedroom, you know, I grew up with an apartment on the 12th floor, and I would sit on my windowsill looking out at Broadway, and that was sort of my happy place to be by myself. But I did spend a lot of time alone in my room. I would go to the park. I loved Central Park. Mm-hmm. I loved just walking. It was a Laurie, and I'm blanking on her last name.
Helgo, maybe?
Yes, Laurie Helgo wrote about being
early writers about it.
Very early. She was before me. She was part of the inspiration for me to start writing about it. And she talked about being a flaneur. And, you know, so New York is a perfect place for just watching and you know, you can be alone and not be lonely in New York because there's just so much to see. And I did a lot of that.
You were trained early. Talk a little bit about that, about you said she inspired you. We're talking about Lori Helgo, H-E-L-G-O-E, right?
Yes.
Who wrote a
That's
book.
Right.
The name
yes,
is Yes,
Introvert Power was the name of her book.
Right.
And that was the first book I read about introversion. And as happens with so many introverts, when you read that sort of thing, it's just like the sun suddenly comes up.
And
you
yeah.
realize, oh my goodness, it's not a flaw. You know, it's not a bug. You know, reading about things, for example, like not liking the telephone, that was huge for me. And it was huge for a lot of introverts because it's presented to us as some sort of character flaw, or we don't like our friends well enough, or something like that. And then you find out, no, this is just something kind of common among us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was a big eye opener for me. And then I was a travel writer at the time. And I wrote about traveling as an introvert because so many times people say, oh, you know, meeting people is the reason for traveling. And that was not the case for me. Watching people, yeah,
uh-huh.
but meeting people, not necessarily. And I wrote it for a website called World Hum about traveling as an introvert. And then I wrote after that 6 tips for traveling as an introvert. And those were the 2 top read stories on that website that year. And that was sort of made me know, oh, okay, this is something that people really want to hear about. And I started the Psychology Today blog after that.
Interesting. So you hit a nerve with that, most obviously, with all the readers. Do you remember any of those tips now? It was a long time ago, but I know you might remember one or two.
I do. I remember things like I would eat dinner early when I'm traveling by myself, mm-hmm. because that way I didn't feel as self-conscious. I would often take walking tours because it would give me an opportunity to be with people and not have to be with people.
Yes.
It gave me a person to ask questions of, you know, the tour guide, and
yes.
sort of oriented me and staved off loneliness, because even introverts can get lonely, mm-hmm. but without sort of requiring too much FaceTime.
Yeah.
I can't remember which tips were about traveling alone versus traveling as an introvert, to be honest.
Yeah, but you've done it. You did it quite a bit then.
Quite a lot, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember you wrote a book about great places to stay, 100 or 1,000.
100 places in the USA every woman should go. And it was one of a series of 100 places books. And mine happened to be the USA because I'm also an avid road tripper.
That sounds like fun. It was a fun assignment, probably.
It was a lot of fun, but I'll tell you what, 100 chapters is a lot.
That's a lot. What was your favorite place to go to?
Oh, I could never, ever tell you. I think, you know, speaking of a good introvert place, one of my favorite places in the country is Monument Valley, which is at the Four Corners, you know, just this otherworldly landscape. And I've been there several times. And then going up to upstate New York, where the sort of suffragist movement began, you know, and seeing Susan B. Anthony's house in Rochester, that sort of thing. That was a great trip.
Inspiring. As long as it wasn't in the winter, right?
No, we went in the spring and it was gorgeous.
What great experiences you've had.
Yeah.
And as an introvert, do you think in journalism, you worked for a newspaper too, right? For
the Yes. The Dallas Morning News.
Yeah. So that was another time too, right? I've always felt like print reporters, many of them are introverted. And I would, you know, when we would talk about some of my work, they seem to really open up and say that, you know, they resonated with the idea of introversion. Do you think that that's the case from your experience, that a lot of reporters, like you were talking about observing?
Yeah. I think it might be because we do, you know, observe. You know, it's hard for me to talk about other people's experience.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, but I think, of course, writing is a fairly solitary, you know, activity, and journalists are writers.
Believe me, I know.
Yeah. I bet it's a little tough for an extrovert to settle down and get a book done.
Well, I'll tell you that, but you know, I reward myself, and you know, I can go to Starbucks and chat with the barista. That's my
which never happens for me. I mean, the worst kinds of jobs I used to have to do when I was working for the newspaper was man on the street stuff, where I had to just go out and stop people. And, you know, I had to answer the phone. There was a rule at the newspaper that you had to answer your phone and you had to return phone calls. And I think that was sort of the beginning of my dislike of the phone sometimes slips into phobia. Because in the pre-email days, of course, if you pissed somebody off with something you wrote, they would call you.
And to answer. Just delete it.
You wouldn't know what you were hearing.
You couldn't swipe. It wasn't like Twitter.
Exactly. Wow.
That makes me feel old knowing all that, right?
Oh, I know.
Really, really interesting. So, so you had a lot of experience, diverse experience in writing and getting out there with people. And so talk a little bit. You wrote two books. One was called Introverts. The first one was The Introvert's Way.
Yes.
Right. And then I think you followed that up with Introverts in Love, for those of you who are not visual, but I'm holding these books up right now. And I love these books too, because they could fit in your purse. They're very small. And the kind of book you say you want to read on a flight and read the whole thing.
Yeah. And you know, Introverts Way in particular, it a lot of it was blog posts that I expanded. So every chapter is fairly discreet. With one E. So you can kind of pick it up and put it down. You don't have to read it cover to cover. You don't have Introverts in Love is the same, but Introverts in Love is a little bit more reported. And I spoke to a lot of different introverts and extroverts about their experiences in relationships. Introverts Way is sort of a general overview in a collection of essays on various subjects.
And your titles are stellar. Okay, I have to say.
Oh, thanks.
For instance, I like people, just not people all the time. We didn't know you were an introvert. We thought you were just a bitch.
That was something somebody wrote to me, and I thought it was brilliant.
Well, I'm glad you took it. You know, and some of them are a little more basic, but like Hell is a Cocktail Party is. I know that my husband would bronze that one.
In fact, one of the title of my first blog post has been used as a meme all over the place, which was Introverts Unite Quietly.
Yes.
You've seen it everywhere. That was taken from me. I'm claiming
credit. So
I get credit for that.
Well, you don't get, well, now on this podcast, that'll be heard by millions. Well,
thank you. Get that word out.
That's what we hope. I want to turn the conversation a little bit from your experience and the books you wrote to your real skill in delving into research and articulating that research and kind of giving us the pros and the cons, making us look at some of the research studies more critically. I was always impressed. You did that, I believe, a lot in your Psychology Today posts, if I'm not mistaken. And so I just wanted to ask you, what did you learn from that experience? It's a large question, but you did find the articles on Google Alerts or wherever you found them and learned about what was happening with introversion. What were some of your reactions to that?
To me, one of the most interesting things I learned, and I think it was speaking to a guy named Lewis Schmidt, a researcher, was, first of all, he described introversion as motivation and shyness as behavior. You know, parsing the difference between introversion and shyness has been an ongoing challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, introversion is not needing to be social a lot. Shyness is you want to, but you're afraid to. And so what that leads to is the fact that introversion and shyness are on different continuums. So you can be introverted and shy, certainly. That seems logical. You can be introverted and not shy, which is me. I'm not shy. I'm not afraid of socializing. I just don't need a lot of it. You can be extroverted and not shy, obviously. And the people who struggle are people who are extroverted and shy because they crave that interaction, but it frightens them. And that is possible. So, you know, people like me who are introverted and not shy, there's nothing I need to change. You know, people who are introverted and shy may limit themselves a little bit. I think it can be a little bit more difficult. But I really think that separating those things, separating introversion and shyness in that way, makes a really huge difference in how you think about introversion and how you approach it.
And how you think about yourself, right? If you're an introvert or an extrovert. Yeah, people are surprised about that. Extroversion and shyness can go together. And what I've seen with extroverts who are shy is that it can come out in a lot of anxiety, you know, verbosity, just kind of, you know, riffing all the time and because they're nervous, right? So
yeah.
It comes out. It's very interesting. So were you ever as a child called shy or did anybody ever see you that way? Or were you more...
No, I don't think so. In high school, my best friend in high school was like she was kind of a sex kitten. She was real pretty. And, you know, I was sort of the quiet sidekick. But I don't think I was ever confused with shy. I was sort of the class president kind. I was, you know, always bookish.
You followed the rules, huh, Sophia?
Sort of, yeah. You know, I'm quietly subversive. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about other things that we were involved in, right, in the larger.
Yeah, world. Yeah, but no, I don't think I ever came across as shy. But I think that I was never the life of the party. Let's put it that way. I would go out and I would sort of, as I do now, you know, I go to a party and I kind of stay in one place and talk to whoever floats my way as opposed to walking out and working the room.
Yeah. You don't feel a need to work the room, as they say.
I don't. And I think that's one of the things I'm fairly awkward at that. You know, I don't know that it would be shyness, but I'm not real good at it because I'm not really good at small talk. And that's another thing that introverts seem to have in common is that the little chit-chatty things don't come naturally to us. I don't really know why anybody would want to hear some of the chit-chatty things I might have to say, so I just don't say them. And so working the room does not come naturally. Networking events, I'm just an abject failure at them. Although if you put me for example, at a lunch table with people where we spend time and the conversation can go deeper, I'm fine. But trying to meet a lot of people is very uncomfortable for me.
Yes. I'm glad you're illustrating, you know, this is a spectrum introversion and extrovert. So it's like you're describing yourself as somebody who studied this. But you know yourself well.
I think that's key for introverts is to figure themselves out and to understand, you know, begin to recognize what it feels like when you've been socializing too much, when you're overextended, and what it feels like when you've been alone too much and you're getting isolated and starting to really understand the nuances of protecting your introversion, but not sort of shutting yourself away.
Yes, yes. Now, life took an unexpected turn for you 3 years ago when you lost your dear husband, Tom, right? I think the beginning of the pandemic, it wasn't related to that, right?
But he had a heart attack.
But you and I were chatting about what do you, you know, as an introvert, you know, navigating that, if we could put that lens on it, that's certainly only one lens, right? But have you found any challenges or any benefits from personal style?
It's been such a challenge. I'm actually working on a blog post about that right now because I need people more than ever. You know, I when I'm alone, I get sad. I do find, you know, in marriage, you can get into kind of a little bubble and other people matter, but, you know, not that much in a way. You know, you've always got your person there. And suddenly I don't have that person. And so I've been saying yes to everything. Now, some people, when they become widowed or they tend to hole up. They can't imagine socializing. Whereas I've had surprisingly the opposite reaction, and I am out and about and seeing people and going places and saying yes to everything. And it's been helpful because it's distracting. Because again, when I get home alone, you know, surrounded by what was our life together. Now he's no longer here. I get sad, but I'm also exhausted. And I need to figure out again how to calibrate my needs for people versus my needs for solitude. It's a whole other thing. I read an interesting article just this morning in the New York Times from 2021, but it was about children who do parallel play, which is just kind of sitting in the same room doing their own things. And adults kind of do that too. And that's what you do with the spouse. You know, you're in the same room together. You're not necessarily interacting. You're watching TV together. You're reading different things. And that's
what's missing.
That's what's missing. Yes. Yeah, so now if I'm lonely, I have to be on. It's an effort to be with people, or I'm alone. You know, there isn't that middle ground of just being with that person who you can be quiet with.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have one friend who will come and spend the day, and we're both freelance writers, and so we'll both sit quietly and work, and that helps a lot. Yeah.
There's a concept called communal solitude. I can't remember who came up with that, but it. I found that when I was in co-working situation, it was very. That's what I experienced. And when you go to a Starbucks or a coffee shop and you see people working, there's that energy that's silent, but it's. You're there, or maybe you might chat and just make some small conversation. But there is something to be said for that. I think there's actually been much about
I did belong to a co-working space for a while, and that was helpful, although I was, you know, I was grandma compared to everybody else there. So
yeah, I know, but that's okay. That's grandma. But, you know, one thing I love about what you do is when you are exploring, you know, a change in your life or whatever, you write about it, you research it. And so you're an inspiration for many who are trying to navigate, let's say, a big loss like that, a huge loss. So I want to really, I admire you for that. You're writing columns about it, great columns, but those of you, you know, Psychology Today, if you know anybody who's lost somebody, what's the name of the column again?
Widow's Walk.
Widow's Walk, right? Great title. So you're, you know, you're understanding your limits. And one of the things I remember you shared with me, and I put it in one of the books, was starts to become a blur, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that you know, you also, and this relates maybe be useful when you're talking about like, how do I know what's enough? Is the concept of boundaries. You know, introverts that I know have, and I think extroverts to an extent need to do this because they can get overly, you know, their energy can just get out of whack.
Spinning out of control. Yeah.
The word I was trying to use. But I think that you had talked about having some relatives come or some overnight guests. I don't know if you remember this. And you said, I really decided that I wasn't going to just go see them right at breakfast, even though they were in my house. There were other people there that could talk with them. And I just stayed and worked on my laptop. And I always remember that image of you sitting in your laptop and then having your coffee maybe and coming out when you were ready. Like, the idea of you didn't need to just hit the ground running, so you to preserve some of your energy. So it sounds like you're doing that, starting to do that more now, or maybe considering that more.
I'm trying to. The pendulum tends to swing somewhat dramatically for me right now, you know, where I'm out and about too much, and then I'm sort of, you know, not responding to texts, you know, and I'm very, very, very lucky. I have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to friends and support and people check on me. And I'm very lucky that way. And so I really try to honor that. But I find, you know, when you talk about my not coming out in the morning, had I come out too early, that funny line, you know, we didn't think, no, you were an introvert. You thought you were just a bitch. I mean, introverts pushed too far are not pleasant, and it doesn't do our reputation any good. And so I really, you know, protecting everybody else too. And that's what's happening to me a little bit now is that I find myself getting irritated with people who are only trying to care about me. And it's not because it's a problem with them. It's because I've pushed myself too far. And so I'm trying to, you know, honor them, honor me, and figure it out. It's a whole new thing for me.
Well, knowing how you've navigated so many of the challenges in your life, I have no doubt that you will come out on the positive side, on the other side of this one, as you already are. I guess as we wind down our interview now, I just want to just circle back to really where we're at with this podcast, which is to understand, you know, how we can support introverts. And I'm talking to the extroverts out there and anybody else who really wants to see introverts have more of a place particularly in our work cultures. So is there any piece of advice or words of wisdom that you might share?
I'm going to share a little anecdote that has to do with, I have a very good friend who's extroverted, and right after Tom died, I went and spent about 3 weeks with her just to get out of my house and to be somewhere else. And we did this parallel solitude thing. And we both were working and she kind of left me alone. And it was exactly what I needed. It was exactly what I needed. I went and visited her last weekend again, the first time I'd been back there. And I was just there for a few days. I was there to see her, but she was still giving me that space because she thought that's what I needed. And I felt neglected. And it kind of almost reached ahead. And she said, oh, I thought that's what you wanted. And it's like, no. Now I need this, you know, I'm here for you. I need the connection. And so it really is a matter of there's a lot of communication that needs to be, you know, as long as I understand what she needs and she understands what I need, we can figure that out.
That's right.
And the same in the workplace, you know, if you know you have someone who in your team who isn't going to speak up in a meeting necessarily, you know, it's up to them, I think. It's up to introverts to express what they need in some way. But it's also might be up to the extroverts to say, okay, here is the space for you to speak or to go off on your own or whatever it is. But it's a matter of communicating what the need is at that time. And that's what I think, how we honor each other, how we support each other.
That's beautiful. Don't make assumptions. Talk about the process. And relationships change and needs change. So we need to articulate those. Beautifully, beautifully expressed. So thank you. This was just such a gift. I'm so appreciative. I want to have people get to know a little bit more of Sophia and your wonderful body of work. So where would you send them? Where would you suggest people go? We'll put some show notes in there, but what do you want to
do? Well, certainly on Psychology Today, the Introverts Corner blog is still up there. All the posts, the hundreds of posts are still up there to read. Widow's Walk is also on Psychology Today. And my website, sophiadembling.com, has some of my travel writing and, you know, more random reading and buy my books.
Wonderful. There's a beautiful body of work, and I'm encouraging everybody to go check out one of my favorite reporters ever, who keeps changing and is so real and honest and a fellow New Yorker.
Jennifer, mutual admiration.
It'll never go away, right?
Right.
Thank you so much for spending. I can't thank you enough for your gift of time today and wisdom. Thank you so much, Sophia.
That wraps up another episode of the Introvert Ally podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you found value from our podcast, we'd love you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. Also, please do share it with others. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.